Welcome back to the Schmozone podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Fusion CBD products, some of the best CBD products on the market. I love using their CBD Intense Relief Rub and their CBD Instant Freeze. They have their Sleep and Recovery, their Hydro Drops. You put those in the morning coffee. It's excellent. And their Fusion Elderberry Gummies. This stuff is fantastic. It's got vitamin C, it's got zinc, and of course CBD. Check them out. Use the promo code SCHMO to get 20% off checkout. You won't be disappointed. Today's episode is also brought to you by Egg Weights. Some of the best stuff on the market, the only hand weights in the world that conform to your body's natural motion. They're great for shadow boxing. They have a 1 pound set, a half pound set, a 2 pound set, you name it. You put their little rubber handles into your ring finger, you use it, you shadow box. It's great. Great for exercising. Use the promo code SCHMO10 to get 10% off. You won't be disappointed. And this show is also brought to you by the most comfortable underwear in the world, Sheath Underwear, where they have the anatomical isolation pouch for your male extremities. They also have a women's line, too. It's fantastic. They're breathable underwear. Robert Patton, their CEO, Iraqi war veteran, he came up with the idea, separating the balls from the shaft, keeping everything comfortable. Check them out. Use the promo code SCHMO at sheathunderwear.com to get 20% off. Let's start the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Schmozone. This is episode number 52. We're back here in studio. I'm Dave Schmolensen, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is...
Helen Yee.
No sports.
Not today.
Not today.
Gotta keep them guessing.
Gotta keep them guessing. And our special guest today, the undefeated 8-0 UFC middleweight, Punahele Soriano. How are we doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's good to be here. It's a nice studio. I'm a little scared.
A little scared. Yeah. There's no bright lights too big for you, man.
Exactly. Yeah,
apparently.
Hey, did you enjoy the snow yesterday?
Yeah, I did. I loved it. I got two huskies and a little pit bull, but she's bald, so she doesn't like the snow too much, but the huskies loved it.
When you say don't like the snow too much, it snowed here in Vegas for like 20 minutes and stuck for 10 minutes, so it went away pretty quickly.
Yes. My pit bull's ideal of snow day, you know?
I was just on the phone with my cousin Eddie in Chicago. He spent 45 minutes digging his car out of a snowstorm from the other day. That's real snow.
That is. Well, I agree.
For us, it was considered real snow, right? Like, our cars, and yours too, probably, unless you live in Henderson like my friend Kasia, because she didn't see any snow, but our cars were just layered with snow. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, until it melted away, like when it heated up to 40, 41 degrees. So, Puna is coming off a huge victory. The first KO of 2021 in the UFC. Also the first ever UFC fight card on ABC. A lot of the household mothers watching and everything like that. We're fresh off of a plane from Fight Island, fighting jet lag. I think your plane came in a couple days sooner because you guys didn't stay for UFC 257. But, man... the world got to watch you go to 8-0. You were fighting another undefeated prospect. Someone's O had to go, and it wasn't yours.
Yeah, luckily, you know, it felt really good to take care of that business. From the second I knew I was fighting Dusko, I was truly intimidated. Like, he's a beast, you know? He's still a beast, in my opinion. And it just felt really good to be able to do that on ABC in front of everyone.
Was that how you were envisioning it to play out?
In a way, I always envision a spectacular performance, a spectacular finish. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be the first round. I know it always kind of happens that way. I'm ready to go the whole three rounds or five, whatever it is.
Seven of your eight victories have all come by finish. The only fight that went the distance for you was to get that UFC contract at the Contender Series, man. So knowing how you... finish fast and finish quickly.
In the first round.
I mean, what's those moments? Let's go back to Contender Series before we go back to the ABC fight card, which we'll get to momentarily. what were you thinking when you were just waiting for Dana to say your name or not say your name to get that contract, knowing your style and knowing how quickly you get guys out of there?
Yeah, it was funny, you know. That's my style. I get people out quickly, and the one time it's probably the most crucial, it doesn't happen, you know. I was really nervous. I was in the back just thinking, like, my next route, like, okay, well, maybe I got to take a couple more fights and come back to the Contender Series. Maybe a couple more fights and they'll pick me up, you know. But luckily, it somehow managed to turn out, and they picked me up, luckily, and, you know, keeping it rolling.
So you were doubting whether they're going to do it or not?
Yeah, 100%. 100% I was.
But that was only 2 years after, or a little over 2 years after you made your pro MMA debut, because mm-hmm. I believe you made it January 28th, 2017. So it's almost your four-year anniversary. Today's the 27th.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that myself. That's pretty cool. That's really cool.
So what's this journey been like, you know, the past 4 years? And like David said, like, most of your victories coming in that first round.
This four-year journey has been quick, to say the least. It's been weird. I feel like I'm extremely lucky that my career has been going this way. Of course, I've had a few setbacks, a few injuries, whatever. But MMA has come really easily to me somehow. I just, all I have to do is show up on time to practice, work as hard as I can work, and then do everything the right way, and, like, everything just turns out, you know? There's people that do everything and beyond that, and they still don't get, for whatever reason, the love or the show, or it just doesn't turn out in their favor. And I just feel like I'm really lucky to where everything just keeps happening in my favor.
But what about your life on the side of MMA to get to this point? Because it's pretty unique itself. You know, your journey, like, I know you still right now work a couple days a week at Extreme Couture, you know, recruiting people, getting memberships, working at the front desk. I know you've done, like, delivery, been runners. You've been close with a lot of these top-tier MMA fighters. Talk to the audience about your background on the side from not just fighting in the cage.
Yeah, shoot. I guess we'd have to date it back to when I was an amateur, I guess. When I was an amateur, I was working, like, three jobs. Fresh out of college, bachelor's degree. I don't even remember what it's in anymore, you know.
And where'd you go to college?
Wartburg College. It's in small little college in Waverly, Iowa. It was nice. Great school. Great wrestling program. Yeah, so I'm fresh off of that. I don't have no clue what I want to do with my life. I'm kind of just roaming around looking for jobs. I didn't even know how to apply for jobs. I'm showing up for jobs interviews in, like, slippers and, like, a regular shirt. Like, zero idea. And somehow I land, like, this teacher's aide position. Oh, I don't know why they hired me. Like, I'm an awful teacher.
You're great with children, you know?
Probably because I just act the same as them. But, yeah, I'm working that job. Maybe, like, 4 hours from whenever school starts till about noon. And then I'd be off the rest of the week until the weekend. I'd be a bouncer on the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. And then I'd be a bouncer on Monday nights. I moved to Vegas after my first pro fight. I'm working at Dre's nightclub for a little bit. And then actually Ali Abdelaziz noticed that, like, I'm always coming to the gym tired. And he kind of did me a solid. He's like, I noticed how tired you are. It's not good to be a fighter and working these late hours and whatnot. Would you like to come work with me? And I had no clue what that meant. You know, I had no clue what he even did. I just knew that Dan worked with them, and if Dan was working with them, it can't be that bad. But
and that's Dan Ige.
Yeah, Dan Ige.
And he's your buddy, who's also UFC featherweight and teammate.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people, I don't know if they know this or not, but we went to high school together. We've known each other for a long time, lived 5 minutes from each other back home in Hawaii. So, yeah, I'm working for Ali and still fighting. And it's kind of cool. Like, and it was the hardest part at the same time. You're really personal, I guess, when you're in that line of work with your athletes. And I'm such a shy guy, and I'm still in that sport. Like, I'm like 1-0. I'm like around these top name guys, and I'm just like, oh, hi, like, hello, my name's Puna. I'm working with Ali. It's just strange, but I was just told to soak it in, just learn from them, kind of see what they do, just be a fly on the wall. And I think it worked. I absorbed a lot. I feel like I absorbed a lot from each and every one of their athletes, and it's just been working out in my favor.
I feel like it was yesterday. It was like a year ago, though, and a year and a half ago. I'm texting you about guys to get interviews with.
You were.
And now he's the guy, and we're bringing him to the podcast. It's crazy, full circle.
100%. Yeah, it's so weird, and it's funny. I still feel like I'm working every now and then. Like Abubakar Nurmagomedov just called me. He's like, hey, what's Ali's address? I'm like, without asking, without question, I'm just sending him his address right away.
It's crazy, though, but that chip on your shoulder, that you never want to lose that, because that keeps you hungry and humble for the next step.
For sure.
But when was that moment where you thought to yourself, you know what, I could actually do this for a living, and I can become pro and make this my career?
I really don't even know when that switch happened, because even, I want to say a couple fights into my pro career, I really didn't know if it was for me. I kind of just had a plan where, like, all right, I'm going to leave to Vegas. I'm going to give myself a solid 2 years of just giving it my all and kind of just see what happens. And maybe 3/4 of the way in is when I really solidified myself and made up my mind that I'm going to make this my career or make this work, regardless of circumstances or not.
Was your family supportive?
Yes and no. I feel like my mom was the only one who was a little reserved about it. I was working a decent job as a teacher's aide, and I know she wanted me to just take a safe route and whatnot. But everyone else, my brother, my dad, everyone else was full force in, and they still support me to this day, and I can't complain. We're a bunch of dream chasers.
That's the only way it should be. So let's go back to your fight against Duska. Like, what was going through your mind when his mouthpiece popped out of the mouth and they were stopping? They stopped the fight momentarily because you finished him in the first round. Mm-hmm. It was getting close to the second round, but there was a pause in action there where you had to be thinking, where, you know, either you're collecting your wits, he's collecting his wits, but it wasn't long after they collected the mouthpiece where you finished him pretty quickly then.
Yeah, I remember my thoughts starting to come back to me, and every time I fight, I completely black out. I don't remember a single thing, and I remember my wits starting to come back to me. And I'm like, I don't want to have thoughts. I don't want to have any negative thoughts to start coming back. And I kind of just phase back into it. I go black again. And then it was funny. I actually heard Eric Nixick in my corner say, he's like, he can't find his mouthpiece. That's a TKO. And my eyes got real big. I was like, really? Is that the rules? But I don't even know if that's the rule or not. I just got really excited.
They spent so much time finding the mouthpiece a few months ago. Whose mouthpiece popped out a few months ago?
I couldn't tell you.
And they were looking forever for it.
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was off the top of my head, because we were there. They're all a blur. But I feel like they would have sat there and they would have made you wait for 5-10 minutes to finish it. But go back real quick. You say you black out.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? You don't think about anything? You forget?
I don't know. As soon as the cage door closes, I just know that my brain is going to shut off. Like, I can remember, like, moments before. Like, we're in the ring, and I'm looking at him, and he's, like, looking around. He'll lock eyes with me every now and then, and he'll just keep looking around. And then right when the ref said go, it just, I don't remember a single thing after that.
Didn't Michael Chandler tell you over the weekend when you interviewed him that he blacked out, like, after his win too, right?
Yeah, you guys are just in the moment. Like, it's larger than life. I can't imagine. This is the first time that fans were in attendance for your fight too. I mean, this whole 3 fights in a week, which we were there for, that's when we've had fights for the first time during this pandemic. But to be on that stage, to be in that arena, to be across the world, to be on ABC for the first time, the UFC, to being the first knockout of the entire year. I mean, for you, a guy who's reserved, you were screaming after that moment too. You were going nuts. You were letting people out. You were letting people, John Anik, you were letting them know that you were here.
That's how he does his talking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently. It's funny. You know, you said I'm so reserved, and everyone kind of knows that. Like, I'm really shy. I'm really quiet. And it's funny, my girlfriend, we watched the fight together as soon as I got home, and she's like, man, it's really weird seeing you fight, because there's a certain look you have when you fight, and I don't know who that person is. Like, I've never seen that look on you before. And she says in the fight, you can see when I kind of snap out of it. I yell, like, I'm a bad boy. And then the next one is like, I'm a bad boy. Like, I return to normal. And she was like, oh, I could see it. Like, that's exactly when you snapped out of it.
It's like a switch.
It's a switch. I guess the only thing I can relate to that is the schmo. Like, talking is the schmo. As you know this too. Yeah. And then being a normal voice. They're two different worlds.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to. Just probably you for fighting. It's A completely different switch.
Well, you mentioned that you black out like once the cage door closes. Mm-hmm. So what are those moments like when you're walking to the cage or octagon?
Yeah, I'm just battling the thoughts in my head. All these thoughts running through my mind from what people are saying to me on Instagram, from what I read on, you know, YouTube and all that. Battling all these thoughts, battling thoughts within myself. Also, just trying to turn those into positive things. So, like, every negative feeling I feel in there, I try to make it positive. Like, oh, I don't like this feeling. I'm too scared. And I'm like, oh, no, I like this feeling. I love this feeling. I want more of this feeling. Anything that, like, I feel I don't want, I just try to flip the script on it and turn it into something I love. And I don't know. For whatever reason, it's been working.
What's your overall thoughts of Abu Dhabi being there, Fight Island, just our situation? We're kind of quarantined. We're locked into this five-star, as Bruce Buffers calls it, the five-star prison.
Yeah.
You can't really move around or see anything, but what was the experience like fighting on Fight Island for you versus obviously being here in Vegas and the local venues?
No, fighting on Fight Island was amazing. I'm pretty reserved fight week anyway. I stay in my room, I shut all the lights off, and just watch cartoons all week, and then I make weight and fight. But I really enjoyed it. The staff was amazing. I feel like they really did their homework. A couple of times they caught me off guard when they'd be like, "Hey, Puna, have a nice day." Me? Puna? Like, nobody calls me Puna, you know? I don't know. It's just strange. But in a good way. Strange in a good way. And fighting there was fun. I'm really surprised the jet lag didn't affect me. I kind of told everyone it wasn't gonna, and I guess I made it happen. But even the fans seemed really well educated. Everyone kind of knew everything about the fight game. It was just really fun, and it was electric.
Which cartoons were you watching?
I watch a lot of like Family Guy, American Dad, just funny stuff.
Comedy's the best.
Just to get your mind off of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love how in tuned everybody is. You know, we stayed at the Crown Plaza Hotel. You guys stay at the W Hotel. The staff there, they deliver like cakes and stuff like that. Just like everything edible on trays. We took some photos of it, like chocolate
and
octagons.
And then we ate it.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing how in tune they are with everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the hospitality, and I like that environment too. Even though we can't go out of the bubble, and ladies and gentlemen, we're stuck in a bubble. Yeah. You deal with the jet lag, but it's just, I feel like everyone's senses are on an extra level by being there.
I feel like they almost have to. Like, it's so far away and it's so uncomfortable that I feel like they do everything and beyond to make you feel at home, I guess.
Did they write something on your mirror?
Yeah, but I'm a terrible reader. I didn't even know there was a contest. I guess, like, if you make a video with your chocolate characters, and the best character got, like, a gourmet meal, whatever they wanted. I know, like, Chiesa and Brad won. I had no clue. I would have tried so hard.
I was in Chiesa's room playing Mario Kart with him the night before he did the weight cut, and I saw his chocolate thing with Neil Magny. He had, like, blood coming out everywhere. He showed, like, a flying knee.
Oh, so you make the chocolate do something.
They give you, like, a face of you and your opponent and two different chocolate characters in this octagon, and I guess you can play around with it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I really wish I tried now, you know, but I literally just took my arm off and bit it. Oh, that's pretty good. And threw it on the side.
That's what Roxanne Modafferi did when I interviewed her. She was telling me she was just like eating a piece off. And
It's easy that way. It's funny. Go back to that. Let's go back to the main event. Max Holloway, fellow Hawaiian, record-setting night, record-performing night. He looked like the champ. He totally looked like the champ. And a lot of people argue that he should still be the champ. Max Holloway, his popularity in Hawaii, has it surpassed BJ Penn's?
I think so. I think so. Especially with that last performance, it's insane because he just keeps getting better. And like, the more the odds are stacked against him, like Hawaii kind of sucks right now with all the quarantine rules in place. There's not a lot you can do from what I hear and whatnot. And somehow, some way, he found a way to elevate himself like that much further. You know, I've been telling everyone all this whole time, like, I feel like a bad friend. I always picked Max, but I thought it would be like a competitive fight. And he just blew them out the water from the get-go, which is incredible.
It's amazing. I think, you know, we obviously expected a competitive fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've watched both these guys do great. I mean, you fought your teammate, Kelvin, with Ige. That was the main event a few months ago. And Caters is as tough as they come. He's been on our show before, as is Ige, as is you. I mean, getting the whole cycle together. Everyone, you guys. But the way he performed, it's like he took his game to a whole nother level. As message sending.
I know. And but was there anyone that inspired you to kind of get into it? Because just think about Max and then also a lot of the fighters coming out of Hawaii, like what David mentioned, BJ Penn as well. Was there someone that inspired you?
Definitely there's a lot of, like, I've drawn inspiration from every fighter from Hawaii. I feel like it would be too hard to pick one off the top, but, like, Dan Ige is kind of the reason I came in. He led me to the gym and whatnot. But I feel like, oddly enough, my inspirations come from, like, other stuff. Like, I'm a huge fan of The Challenge on MTV. And, like, there's a guy in there, CT. I don't know.
Oh, CT?
Yeah, he's a big inspiration of mine. Like, I love that guy. I watch, like all the challenges and stuff before fights and just get super inspired. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, he came from, like, Real World. Real World Paris. Because I used to watch all of them.
Oh, I'm obsessed.
I never watch it.
Oh. Or it's really interesting. It's addicting.
Very.
For some reason, all I was thinking of was The Miz getting in that, or defending everybody. Or why am I thinking of The Miz? The Miz and Joe Rogan's Fear Factor, wasn't that a thing? Huh.
Yeah. He was on there.
He was on Fear Factor. Yeah. He was breaking up a fight between two people. That was, for some reason, when you said The Challenge, that was what came across my mind.
Miz was on The Challenge.
He was on The Challenge, too?
Yeah, he was on The Challenge.
Look at that guy. He puts a "the" in front of his name. That's everyone who does that. The Rock, The Miz, The Schmo. I mean, I have respect for that.
All successful.
I have respect for that. But also another Hawaiian teammate of yours, too, Brad Tavares.
Yeah.
He had a victory as well.
Heck yeah.
Middleweights and stuff like that. Is he one of your sparring partners, I imagine, too?
Oh, 100%. Since before I was even in the gym, he would come down, and the gym I trained at back home in Hawaii was the gym he was at, too. So it kind of just, like, you know, going along the line. But it's crazy. I love whenever me and Brad have camps together. It's love and hate because it's scary. Like, when Brad gets sharp, he gets sharp, and it's a real scary force to deal with. But it's great because we just sharpen each other up and get better and better, and we just get elevated super quickly.
And your division is freaking on fire.
Your division is stacked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of good stuff. They just announced a bunch of great fights. I know Marvin Vittori is going to be fighting Darren Till.
That's a crazy one.
It's going to be a great fight. And then Paulo Costa, Robert Whittaker. You got Izzy going up to light heavyweight to challenge Jan. It's an interesting time to be middleweight. Kevin Holland, who had a better 2020 than Kevin Holland.
No. Derek Brunson.
And so when you look at someone like Kevin Holland, who starts off unranked and has now climbed his way to the top 10 in a calendar year, I know you had to wait 13 months between your last fight and this fight, injuries and stuff. I think you had two canceled bouts. Do you look at that as your inspiration or as a goal for you to get into the top 15 and those rankings to shoot up pretty quickly like Kevin Holland?
Yeah, I find it both my inspiration and, like, I'm a little nervous about that too. Like, I would like to be the guy that makes that jump and leaps to get to the top rankings real quickly as he did. But also, like, he's not going to fight anybody easy anymore. It's going to be all tough fights from here on out, and that's a scary thought to think of. And I'm still early into my fighting career. Comparing my ring time and everyone else's ring time, like, I'm still a rookie.
Well, is there, like, a timeline for you to want to get back in there?
I do have my buddy's wedding in March. It's, like, mid-March, so I'm thinking maybe May or something would be nice for me. May, and then we'll keep it rolling from then on.
It's super interesting the way you kind of put this too. Taking your time and being very young in the sport reminds me of actually Brad's last loss was against Edmund Shahbazyan, someone I know who the UFC is very high on. He's a very young guy who's just he gets ranked. He's only getting killers, mm-hmm. and then he steps in there against a guy like Derek Brunson,
yeah.
who's got the ring time, who's got the experience over him, and you kind of saw a different level to that. When you look at something like that, is that something that gives you hesitation? Or you could take your time, no different comparisons. Like, what do you look at when you look at the different opponents? And like you said, those higher ranks in the middleweight division.
Yeah, I wouldn't say hesitation, but at the same time, like, the way he, like, ended up towards the end of that fight, like, oh, that's one of my biggest fears. Just, like, he didn't seem necessarily too hurt, but more just, like, so exhausted and so winded he couldn't move. And that's, like, one of my biggest fears is just not even getting beat up, just being so tired that, like, your body just won't work. But at the same time, like, I want that. I want to be able to battle that. I want to test myself against it. I want to get better and know I can beat that kind of stuff, you know?
Well, is there someone you look at, maybe a potential opponent that you would like to face and like test yourself against next?
Yeah, fantasy type opponent.
I don't know. I'm honestly the worst at these things. I'm the worst and best because I won't say no to anyone. I'll say yes to whoever. Making fights for me is really easy. But also, I don't know. It's just a weird concept for me. That's probably the one thing in MMA I need to work on the most is picking my next fights and being more outspoken, I guess.
I mean, you have the opportunity on the mic when they shove it to you, too. But I think it'll happen over time. But, you know, just taking what they give you and then doing finishing and the type of fashion that you do, I mean, I think that's speaking volumes as is. Let's talk about some of your teammates, too, because you're over at Extreme Couture. There's a lot of great fights. First one I'm just going to throw out there. There's a huge rematch that's coming up at UFC 260.
Yeah.
Francis Ngannou, Stipe Miocic. I mean, we were at the pro practice. Nothing to say, but how is Francis's wrestling and takedown defense evolving over the past few months? Because you know that's what he's got to be focusing on, among other things.
Yeah, for sure. Even before the Stipe fight, his takedown offense even and defense has drastically increased. It's scary. There's some guys I see him go in with and, you know, you would think they have the better wrestling and it would be easy for Francis to just beat him up on the feet, but Francis is going out there and taking these guys down and making them look like they haven't wrestled before. It's kind of incredible.
Talk about someone who doesn't get much ring time in the past couple of years. It's Francis Ngannou.
Exactly. Now, what about someone else? Dan Ige? Upcoming fight against Ryan Hall, and he ordered Ryan's,
he spent a couple hundred dollars to enroll into his Ryan Jiu-Jitsu Hall's Jiu-Jitsu seminar.
Yeah, that was a savage move. That was hilarious. Very, very good gamesmanship on Dan's part. I kind of want to watch that too, actually. Hopefully we can team up and watch that together. I'd like to learn some moves, but I'm super excited for this fight for Dan. I feel like Ryan Hall is a tricky guy, but there's nothing I think can bother Dan. Dan's so mentally tough, so mentally focused. And when he has something in his mind, he's like a shark seeing blood. It's just, you can't take him off of it.
All of his fights are entertaining.
Yeah.
And even if you think he's the underdog, he's always testing the limits to his opponents. And obviously, he's going to want to keep the fight standing.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan's going to want to keep this thing to the ground. Dan's going to be game to take the fight anywhere as it goes.
Yeah.
But do you think there's going to be some sort of focal point to keep this standing?
I don't know. I was talking to some friends about this, and I was saying, like, man, Dan's such a beast. Like, I could see him playing the game down there with him, like, if momentum starts going in Dan's favor, like, I could see Dan getting super confident and, like, getting the better of him on the ground once Dan's, you know, his confidence gets in there with him. Dan's not afraid to roll with the best of them.
I know. He's just rolling with Jake Shields the other day, too. You guys had working with him. I mean, a bigger guy, great grappling. Mm-hmm. Like, look, he's game for anything.
Yeah, he's a freak.
Take it where it goes. Someone who's been coming in and out of the gym, and I know he's been training with you guys. He's challenging for the bantamweight title, Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah.
But I know he also went back to New York to Ray Longo. What has it been like with him coming in and out of camp? Like, it's interesting to me that he's splitting time between two camps, getting ready for a championship fight.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope that works good for him. He seems to be doing fine. Every time I see him in the practice room, he's looking great. I see guys like going rounds in on him, trying to like get him tired. He looks great on everybody he goes against. And he's a super nice guy. I thought, for whatever reason, I thought he was kind of like a big-time, like Hollywood-type guy. And, you know, he looks the part. He speaks really well. I was like, this guy's going to be too cool for me. But every time I see him, he strikes up conversation. He talks to everybody around him, really social, really nice. And it's just it's nice to have him in the gym.
What's the atmosphere at the gym been like? Because every time we're in there, and David, you mentioned it, why they won like gym of the year. There's always, you know, so many different fighters, different promotions just going in and out of there. But there's such a good culture and environment about Extreme Couture.
Yeah, you guys welcome in people, in and out people from different camps, like a situation like Aljamain. I know like Atman Azaitar was in there with Justin Gaethje, Kamaru Usman, which I'll ask you about as well. You guys bring in other people, and just because if you look at the situation, and I kind of said this too when Coach Dennis and Coach Eric maybe do the speech when I gave the Schmo Award for the team award. It's like the culture and the camaraderie that you guys built there and continue to build over time, especially at a time where other gyms are closing and people are without training partners. You guys welcome all of that in and do whatever you can to keep the lights on and to keep the competitiveness going at all costs.
Yeah. It's weird. I think other people in the gym might see it differently from how I see it, but in a sense, I get like a Bad News Bears vibes from us. Like, I feel like we're kind of all like misfits in a way. Like, we just have a good time. We're rowdy. But like, at the same time, like, we just stick together and like everybody's tight with each other. There's not like tiny little cliques and whatnot. I just feel like, you know, everyone's tight with each other. And for me, every day is like a holiday in there. I love it. There's always a big smile on my face when I'm in there and just having fun.
I saw your post-fight press conference where you're telling people that you're selling the memberships and there's like a good deal, right?
I mean,
or it ended.
There might still be a deal. I don't know. I honestly get really nervous when I have to sell memberships. Like, I'll be like, "What's your name?" And then like instantly, I'm drenched in sweat and like I got sweat all over their membership paper. I'm just like, oh. I don't know. It's really hard for me.
So were you one of those people when the teacher called on you in class who were too nervous to talk or to say an answer?
Yeah. I would be so nervous that I get it wrong. So I just try and make like a funny joke. Funny joke to cover up how scared I was. I was the class clown in 2010 in high school.
So you can't be that nervous.
Yeah.
I don't know. I am, but I'm not. Like, once you get to know me, I open up a little.
See, I told you. He has a great personality.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has that underneath sometime, right?
Just got to chip away.
You got to chip away. But what is it, do you think, is it just like when people's eyes are peering at you and you look at that, you think about what they're thinking about? What is it that makes you nervous?
I don't know. Honestly, I've always said this. I don't think I could perform anything in front of a crowd except for fighting. Like, for whatever reason, when I'm in there, I can perform to the best, even better than what I'm capable of. But if I was to like sing or like, I don't know, play an instrument, dance, I'll just like freeze up and there's just no way I could do it.
It's a completely different skill set too. I can't do that either.
I don't know how Israel like dances and then fights. Like, that's crazy.
That was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Especially the entrance he did. We were there in Melbourne, Australia, 60,000 people, Marvel Stadium, where he literally does the whole choreography, a dancer team with his buddies, backflip and everything. And then he gets in the ring and he stops. I thought, you know, the way things were going, if there was five more seconds in the first round, he would have finished Whitaker in the first round.
100%.
Then he comes out guns blazing and does it in the second.
And he's a good dancer, too.
Freakishly good.
It was like, you know, the America's Best Dance Crew?
Yeah.
Yeah, just how good those dancers are.
And with Conor McGregor losing, I think it's, and obviously with Habib retiring, I think it's clear as night as day that that is your superstar, that your 1A guy. You're put a star and Mario Kart around this guy. That's your face of the UFC.
Oh, 100%. It's undeniable at this point.
Well, do you think that he can beat Jan?
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think it's still a dangerous fight for both guys, but I'm actually more in favor of Israel for that fight.
it's one of those things where it's power against speed and precision, you know, too. Yeah. I mean, Israel's got power. Don't get me wrong. But I'm talking about the legendary Polish power.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, but the question is he going to be able to connect the legendary Polish power to Israel? Is he going to connect that legendary Polish power to Israel before Israel's precision and the striking takes afloat? The way he was able to pick apart Paulo before Paulo could even set up, that was so spectacular.
Yeah, it was scary, you know? He really didn't even get a chance to get started, like, just from the get-go, chopping those legs, moving around. He really just did not have a second to kind of get focused on him.
But if he beats Jan, do you think John Jones goes back down? He hasn't made his heavyweight debut. We're all kind of waiting for
I think John Jones is too committed from everything we've seen. I think we're going to have to see him at heavyweight. And what happens in that fight at the end of March is going to be a big indicator of what John Jones is doing next, who he's fighting, what weight he's going to fight at, how it's going to go down. But going back to the Francis, though, and the takedowns and all that kind of stuff, it fascinates me so much, and that's why I asked the question. It's like, anyone who gets tagged by Francis, it's over. It's nights out. It's lights out. It's game over. And we saw how quickly he's been starching people. People have been afraid to fight him. It's like the versatility, though, you're saying from what you've seen from him, you think there's going to be a huge difference between the first fight and the second fight, how it plays out because of the versatility he's been developing.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not saying he's going to go out there and do it. Like, he's not going to put on a takedown clinic on him, but I think he could, but Francis is going to fight Francis's fight, I think. I think the skill building he's been doing is just going to help him fight his style even better. He doesn't have to go to those styles necessarily. He's just going to fight the way he fights and be able to use what he's learned to help him.
Now, what about the other title fight that David mentioned earlier, Aljamain Sterling's?
Yeah.
How do you see his fight against Pewter playing out?
That's a tough fight. I could see it going Aljo's way for sure. And Jan's no slouch. I see it's weird. I feel like wrestlers, you don't really see like kicker wrestlers like Aljo. You see a lot of like boxer wrestler types. But Aljo is like, he'll kick you from afar. And then when you close that distance, he'll wrestle you and take your back. And he's really good at that. And I think it's interesting. I think Jan comes in hard with his hands. So I could be wrong. I'm no expert, but I feel like it kind of plays into Aljo's thing. Like, he's going to have to close the distance to not get hit with those kicks. And when he does, takedowns will be there for him.
Everyone talks about how, Jan has moved to American Top Team. Both of these guys have kind of shifted things from their traditional camps. Like we mentioned earlier about Aljo going from New York to Vegas, Vegas to New York, and back and forth like that too. And having that wrestling background and then that Muay Thai background of Pewter Jan, you know, styles make fights. But the thing that you mentioned with Aljo and his kicks, he's been significantly working on his striking. Yeah. And he knows that that's going to have such value. But I think what you just mentioned too, the wrestling and him closing the distance, that could be the difference maker. I mean, what was it, 88 seconds with Corey Sanhagen? And great. Corey Sanhagen's a striking specialist.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to see the person who dictates the style of fight is going to be the victor.
100%.
Looking at last weekend, though, what did you think about Dustin's win over Connor?
Oh, I thought it was incredible. I thought the craziest thing about it is, like, you could literally see Dustin's confidence rising in the fight. It was weird. It seemed like he was kind of like shelled up, like wasn't really sure. I could be totally wrong, but to me, it looked like he wasn't sure of himself. And then towards the end of the first, beginning of the second, he starts to touch him a little more, hit him, and like he starts to point and stuff, and his confidence gets bigger and bigger. And then he goes out and finishes him. Like, it's insane. What a story.
I think we were talking about it the other day. This could have been with like Coach Dewey Cooper, and I were having a conversation about it, but it's like, Dustin got touched up by the Connor's left hand early on, and that was in the first round. And it seems like after that, when he took the shots and he stood there, he went forward. He might have blinked a few times.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, this is what it feels like again.
Yeah.
I can take this. And then he went forward, and those calf kicks.
Yeah.
It was such a difference maker. And like you said, you felt the confidence of Dustin Poirier grow as that first round continued. And the longer that fight went on, the more it played into his favor.
Yeah. And afterwards, Connor, how was he describing his leg? Like the size of an American football.
And at a press conference, he was telling us that it was like the size of an American football that went into to his leg. I mean, it's a crazy thing.
Yeah, for sure. It's weird. You know, I've been rolling with Ali and those guys for so long that I've pushed Connor to like the back of my mind for so long. You know, I'm Team Khabib all the way. And I just think it's so weird that I actually feel bad for him. Like, oh, just... He looked like he might really be turning a new leaf, trying to be a better person, and, you know, just does a little too late maybe, you know?
Well, he also did say that, like, his time away from the Octagon maybe had something to do with it. Do you think so? Like,
I hope so. Who knows? Yeah.
Well, go back to the Team Khabib thing that you had mentioned, because I want to bring this up. We were delirious when we did the last podcast. We were at Fight Island.
Oh, yeah, sleep-deprived.
Sleep-deprived. Khabib crashed an interview I was doing with Matt Serra and Dean Thomas, and I got one question to ask him about coming back, and I brought up GSP's name. But this was before the Conor fight. And after watching the Conor fight, I look at this lightweight division. All those guys are fantastic. But Khabib's on a certain level and where he could be like, what's there left to prove? Dustin Poirier by far is the most deserving of a lightweight strap. And we saw what Khabib had done to Poirier. We saw what he has done to Justin Gaethje, the number two guy. There's nothing left per se for him to prove. And then I bring up GSP, that's legacy, it's 30, you know, it's father's plan and everything like that. I'm saying, hey, Khabib, when he crashed the interview. GSP, what do you think? What do you think? Oh, I was direct messaging him. I was just talking about it. Tell him, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. He didn't close the chapter on that. I mean, you've rolled with him. You've rolled with Ali. I mean, the competitive juices are going to be there. In fact, Khabib's coming to Vegas this week, I think, too. Yeah. Do you think we see 30-0? Do you think we see him fighting to try a 10 for 30-0?
I don't know. I'm sure the competitive juices will always be there. He'll always be working out. I personally would love to see it. It scares me seeing him fight because there's so much pressure on him and stuff, but he handles it so well, and I love seeing him win as well. But I feel like he's on like Michael Jordan vibes right now. He's trying to get into soccer, trying to explore the next thing. And it's interesting. I want to see him play soccer. I think he'll do great.
But that's a serious thing.
I have no clue.
I see him posting
about
it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a real thing. I'm sure he's great at it. He's great at anything, but I didn't know that was a real thing.
Yeah, I thought he was just trying to chase like that Michael Jordan basketball to baseball to, you know, it's going to soccer now.
And that's my hero, Michael Jordan. I'm glad you used that reference and not someone like LeBron James, but that's a different story.
Who says LeBron James?
No, I'm just saying. No, but I think that's really fascinating, too. Do you think that there's people that are saying Conor McGregor's done, where he's done everything. How can you write someone off like that?
Yeah.
Would you say he's done? Would you? Isn't that too extreme?
Yeah, I would say it's too extreme. I don't know if he's done, and I don't know if he's – I'm in between done and his best days are what is it, ahead or behind? I don't know how the phrase goes. But I feel like he'll still put on great performances, but I feel like the book on how to beat him is kind of written. Like, if you can survive a few big shots, you know, get him tired, and I feel like it's kind of turns into your fight.
So that's why you think that his best days are...
Could be, yeah, behind him, I guess. But I think he's also a competitor, too, and we'll see if he can, you know, collect himself, get back together, and get back on it.
He's someone with so many options. Mm-hmm. You got people pulling through him at every different angle. I mean, he's such a successful entrepreneur now. He's got his great, you know, the Proper 12 whiskey company that's going strong. He's got an opportunity to box Manny Pacquiao at any time. And, you know, this is going to be Manny's last year of boxing. So Manny's probably got one or two more fights left in him. He could be one of them. And then, you know, does he want to go back to the drawing board and climb his way up? I think he's ranked 6 now. I think a perfect fight for him. And I just think payday-wise, and I suggested this, I think it's Tony Ferguson.
Oh, yeah, that's a great fight.
That would be, crazy. Amazing.
I think it's a couple years too late, but it doesn't matter. The timing is everything. They're both coming off losses.
Yep.
I mean, Tony deserves this payday.
100%.
I want to see that fight happen.
That would be a crazy fight, start to finish. I have no clue who I even think would win that fight.
I think we learned our lesson from asking you about predictions for fights. Don't worry, we weren't asking you on that.
What about Michael Chandler's UFC debut?
Oh, Michael Chandler.
Oh, man. You know, I got to put some respect on the guy's name. I think he said in an interview himself, this is the worst matchup for him stylistically. But he confronted that and overcame it in a spectacular fashion, incredible fashion.
I was shocked. I mean, I think he's only fought one guy 6 feet or over until Dan Hangman, Hooker. But I was just surprised at how timid Hooker was from the get-go, just completely staying on the outside. And I knew he wanted to stay on the outside and pick him apart. But it's like, he gave him so much respect. Yeah. And then just the way that Chandler confused him going in and out, going to the body, and then how he was able to clip him. For a wrestler, man, who's fast hands, Michael Chandler.
Yeah.
Fast hands.
And talk about kind of that pressure, right? Of everyone trying to see, how good is he going to be? And then in October, going through that fight week to be an alternate and just all that anticipation building, right?
Yeah, I'm guilty of that being that too. You know, I wanted to see how good he was. I feel like I added to that. And I all credit to him. I love the type of person that rises to adversity and overcomes it. I'm all about that kind of stuff. I love it.
Yeah, and I have a really good rapport with him too. And now he's taking it to the next level. I think he was just FaceTiming with Ric Flair today. The guy's he's going next level.
Michael.
Listen, he's not here for a long time. He's here for a good time. He's made that clear, and he's definitely going to make a good time. And he's proven it too. So, I mean, to me, what makes sense, there's four guys at the top there. Habib retired, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you look at Poirier. I think a great matchup for him would be Oliveira, and then I think Gaethje should fight Chandler. Winner of Gaethje Chandler fights the winner of and the belt should be given to the winner of Poirier and gets Oliveira.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm for all those fights.
That's
you know,
your four right there.
Then you also think too, Nate Diaz is trying to come back.
Listen, if one of those guys wants to fight Nate Diaz in those four, Nate Diaz has earned the right to fight one of those guys too. Payday, legacy, OG, the sport steps in there.
Yeah.
Put Nate Diaz's his name in the hat for any of there too. I'm okay with that.
You could put like the top like eight or something in the hat, maybe even 10, and just
that
draw them randomly.
So much fun. Yeah.
Paul Felder.
Yeah.
That's a good one too with Nate Diaz. I mean, there's a lot, even though they kind of debunked the because there's the whole thing at the beginning of the week when we got there during your fight was who's Nate Diaz going to fight at 155.
Yeah, he said it wasn't him.
So that Dana comment on that? Yeah, who knows?
Who knows?
Maybe he didn't know. Right. Maybe they changed that. Tuesday's matchmaker meetings, they always switch that up. And combat sports news, I kind of saved this towards the end too because brace ourselves. There's a huge fight that's being announced. It's actually a boxing fight. Our own Ben Askren's getting an opportunity to show some hands. Yeah. He's got an opportunity to be the savior of the MMA community against this kid Jake Paul.
Yeah. You know.
You can speak your mind. It's okay.
I'm just trying to think of the right words to say. He's accomplished a lot in his career. But man, this is a hard one for him. I who knows? I really hope he can surprise me and make me eat my words, but I don't know, man.
Am I being naive? I'm asking which one, Ben or Jake?
I think Ben's going to have a rough night.
I do too.
Unfortunately, like I wanted to smash him. I don't like everything Jake's been saying and whatnot. I don't like it at all.
I don't support it. I've interviewed both of them quite a few times. I've actually watched both of them work at their respective crafts. I mean, Jake's calling out the right MMA fighter from his perspective. 100%. I think he's even been to his Askin Wrestling Academy, too, as a kid, him and his brother. I think Ben's posting that. And I love Ben. What I love the most from this aspect with Ben is Ben's getting the pay. He's staying relevant. It's going to be his biggest payday yet to date. Good for him. With that said, he needs to be trained in boxing and take it seriously. This kid's been Jake's been working for 3 years. I think he's just working with a bare-knuckle fighter. I think he's now calling to spar with Dustin Poirier. Dustin will take him up on that offer. Mike Perry was going to find him in Florida. They're going to go and they're going to spar. like this kid's actually boxing. And Ben is coming off of a hip surgery, by the way. Yeah, he just had hip surgery in like September, beginning of September. Like Ben is one of the toughest guys around, and he's going to be there and he's going to take shots. But if he doesn't go in there and if he doesn't put combinations and throw hands and defend himself, he's not going to win this fight.
Yeah, the only thing I really see him doing, maybe like dirty boxing him, just putting his weight on him, trying to get him real tired or something. But, man, and like I'm really not trying to be disrespectful to him. When I was coming up as a wrestler in high school, he was my favorite wrestler to watch. Like, I loved Ben Askren. I didn't have the best internet to watch all his videos and stuff, but what I could see, I loved it, you know? But it is might be a rough night in the office for him.
Well, the thing with Ben, though, is he has such a good sense of humor that even if, you know, he does not win, he'll probably just laugh about it.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think Jake is actually working with Jorge Masvidal. That's another name I didn't say. He's actually going to be doing... Yeah, so
I read about
the troll level.
Wow.
These kids, I mean... Well, here's the thing that bothers me too, and I hope you're not in that. Like, when they start calling this crap out and all the MMA fighters, hey, sign me up. That's what these kids want you guys to do. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get inside the ring with someone 100%. Who's going to throw real hands. That's not someone with a wrestling background. They're not. Mm-hmm. He's calling out Dylan Danis for a reason. He's calling out Ben Askren for a reason. Like, he's not going to call out Platinum Mike Perry.
No way.
He's not going to call out Dustin Poirier. Nah. Conor McGregor, I could see him calling out because if he's offering him $50 million, what's his payday going to be?
Exactly.
Look, I'll call someone out for $10 million. I mean, come on. $10 million? What the? But, so there's strategic levels to it. So, like, when you get the MMA fighters calling, hey, I'll take the fight, they're taking the bait.
Yeah, yeah.
They're doing exactly what these kids want you to do.
I mean, yeah. You said it earlier. I think Ben's just in it for the money. It's probably going to be a great payday for him, you know? Teaching wrestling clinics with a broken hip probably isn't the best thing, most successful thing for a while. So why not get a huge payday?
And the thing I noticed too, what Jake's doing, he's following his wife now. Like he does this. He follows the girlfriends. Like he did this with Dylan Danis' girlfriend. He's doing this with the wife. Ben Askren's the worst person to try to troll. He'll suck that up and eat it all up. So now Amy, his wife, is getting more followers, and that's good for her real estate business. Like, they'll soak this up. Ben will take all that. He doesn't get offended by any of that.
No, not at all.
So if he just focuses on boxing and the training, I don't know. He's probably working with Coach Duke Rufus, amazing kickboxing career, great coach too. But if he needs to focus these next few months on just pure freaking boxing, and that's it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's all he has to do, just box, literally.
Well, what about kind of the narrative that some people are trying to take from it, where it's like Jake Paul, quote, YouTuber or internet celebrity versus, quote, UFC fighter or former UFC fighter Ben Askren? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is, like, even some articles that I've seen, like, people will be like, Ben Askren, former UFC fighter, and just kind of paint that picture where it's, like, if Jake beats him, like, Ben almost represents, like, the MMA community in a way.
Yeah, sure. That's why, like, I'm kind of, like, so, like, ugh, like it kind of hurts me to say, like, Ben might lose and whatnot, but... I want him for a win. I like the camaraderie I've been seeing on Twitter, like Bilal is saying Max has to put his coaching hat on and help him out and stuff like that. It's cool to see the camaraderie from everyone coming together.
And also, though, I think like the big networks, and I called out the ESPN for fabricating, like, I hated when they jumped on the meme of Conor McGregor on the floor when literally all he did that entire week was go through their circuit, their car wash or media stuff, going on everyone's show, whether it's Stephen A. Smith or Ariel or Brett or he's just jumping and doing it. And then they all just turn on him, turn his back. It's all for the clicks. But just like they say, oh, ex-UFC star. ex-UFC fighter. They called Nate Robinson, all due respect, I love him, three-time NBA champion, played for my Chicago Bulls, an NBA star, former NBA star. He wasn't a star. He may have made an all-star team. I'm not sure if he even did, but he wasn't a star. He was a solid player. He's a good player. A star to me is he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He was never going to be a Hall of Famer. So they fabricate this stuff. They milk it just for the extra clicks. And that's the society we live in social media anyways.
Yeah, it's a strange one, you know? I don't know. I'm not really with it either. It's still new to me. It's just, it is really weird, huh?
It is weird. It is weird.
And some of the, like, social media, like the comments and stuff, right? Like you were mentioning earlier. Man,
I hope you're not reading too much into all the comments and stuff that you get.
Oh, I read every single one.
You do?
No mercy. Yeah.
And how do you feel about it afterwards?
Now I think it's hilarious. Like, I got to go back and unblock like 100 people. That was like, they'd write one negative comment, oh, block right away.
It's like Helen over here.
But yeah, I want to go back and unblock them, write some funny stuff in their comments and whatnot. But I like to read everything. It's not going to change the way I fight, you know.
Well, you fight great.
Yes.
And we are super happy you came and joined us in the Schmo Zone. Do you have any final thoughts, anything to leave our guests with? And by the way, I have a pair of Sheath underwear I've been staring at.
For me?
For you, of course, man.
Should I put this on right now?
You could, but then they'd probably kick us off the interways for showing
for sure.
the good things. But they're comfortable, man. They're really nice. I think you'll like them.
Yeah, thank you so much.
The women's line's very comfortable, too.
Yeah. I'll have to try those on, too.
Yeah. We gave them to Misha last time we were here. But give the audience your final thoughts, man.
Final thoughts. Oh, it's great to be here. I'm getting nervous again now that you say this. Free mic time. I just get so nervous. I don't know.
Let them see you sweat, man.
I think you can see it. Oh, boy. Thank you, I guess.
That's it?
I don't know. What should I say? Give me some help.
Give you some help. You know, you may not have heard much about me. I'm undefeated. I don't talk trash. Okay. I'll sign on the dotted line for anybody they put in front of me. I'm not just here for a good time. I'm here for a long time. Puna Soriano, remember my name.
I'm not just here for a good time. I'm here for a long time. Or, no, I think I said it backwards. No, Puna Soriano, undefeated. Here for a good time, not a long time. Yeah.
Long time and a good time.
Good long time.
There it is.
You need to be his Paul Heyman.
I'll be your Paul Heyman.
Please, I'll say whatever you say. No questions asked.
I'll tell you what. Before the next fight, I'll text you some ideas.
Please, I'll say it. It could be the worst thing ever and get me in trouble. I don't care. I'll say it.
No, I got you. I got some ideas. I got some ideas, man. we're getting close, man. This is you. This is your year. This is the year.
Yes. Yeah.
You keep climbing. You get that number next to your name.
Yeah.
Big fights to come.
Yeah.
No intimidation.
None.
Yeah, and don't worry or ever feel bad about being like nervous or scared because I can relate.
She can.
100%.
Yes. You should have seen her before they put a mic in front of her face. She wouldn't talk to anybody.
Oh, I almost start like crying, sweating.
Yeah, it's me.
Sweat. Yeah.
There it is.
Working on it.
No, it's good, man. This is great. This is probably your first hour-long sit-down.
Very first. That was an hour? That was quick.
I know, man.
Like 2 minutes.
Well, I appreciate it. That's time flies by when you're having fun,
yeah,
or so they
sure.
say. Episode 52 of the Schmo Zone podcast. We are out.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.